My name's Wei Dongcui. Thank you for Alex's introduction. And this is work done with, I did with my colleague Mark Spinado from Maxar Research, and two of our former intern students, Zhilei Xu from MIT and Alex Chen from UIUC. So let me first start to explain what do we mean about kernel rootkit footprints. We all know what's a kernel rootkit. It's a kernel mode malware. For kernel rootkit footprints, we mean memory changes a kernel makes for hijacking code execution or hiding its activities. So for hijacking the code, for hooking the code, the easy way is to just modify the code directly. For instance, you can replace an instruction by a jump instruction to our own code. This is very easy to check. And the second way to do it is you can manipulate a function pointer in the data structure. So it's easy to check the function pointer in static data because we know its locations. But dynamic data is a challenge because dynamic data can be anywhere it's dynamically allocated. Furthermore, hooking a single function pointer may be just enough for an attack. So you don't need to have so many function pointers hooked by hiding yourself or running your code. So given this, we really think that we need to check all function pointers. So to check all function pointers, one thing we must do is to identify all the dynamic data so that we can check all function pointers. This is our goal. But then given a kernel rootkit in memory, it is just like a needle in a haystack. So here are some numbers. For a typical Windows 7 kernel, we have like 100 plus up to 200 kernel modules loaded. Then we have 100,000 up to a million different data objects in the kernel. And for in the data objects, we have more than 100,000 function pointers. How can we really find all these data objects and all the function pointers? So there are previous work. Here I list three of them. They all leverage this memory traversal, garbage collection style memory traversal. So we started from a global variable. We know its location, we know its type. Then we follow the pointer. In this case, it's a pointer to type A. So we identify an object of type A. Then we follow the pointers within type A. We can identify type B and type D. Then we can follow the pointer in type B. In the COB work, actually, COB also uses static analysis to infer types for generic pointers. For instance, like a void star. What does this void star pointer use for in the program? So COB analyzes the program and can identify the candidate types. So Marcus and I also work on the COB work. I want to make it clear here. Then the question, the big problem for this memory traversal is what if a pointer is invalid? In this case, let's assume this pointer A1 to type B is corrupted. Then the errors of this single pointer error will be propagated to the data objects identified by following this pointer, and all these errors will accumulate. So this is a problem we observe when we apply the COB to real-world crash dumps. So for 10 Windows Vista crash dumps we run COB on, this chart reports the number of true positives, like a true function, malicious function pointers we find, and the true suspicious function pointers that's missed by COB. It's like a false negatives. We can know this because this is a function pointer reported by our new tool. Then the gray bar is basically false positives. These are the false suspicious function pointers reported by COB. As you can see, COB didn't work well with real-world crash dumps. Why is that? It's because pointer uncertainty is unavoidable in real-world memory snapshot. So there are two kinds of pointer uncertainty. One is invalid pointers. Well, if you write a C program or C++ program, you know, you need to initialize your data. It's not uncommon that people forget to initialize the data, or they even choose to only initialize a part of the data. And the second part is data could be corrupted. So we expect corrupted pointers in crash dump. We even expect corrupted pointers in a normal running program because they just haven't crashed yet. So the second part of point uncertainty, we call ambiguous pointers. There are two kinds. First, we see a lot of pointers in union kind of construct. So it could be used as a pointer, could be used as an integer, or could be used as a pointer for A, or could be used for pointer type B. The other kind is generic pointers. In COP and also in COP, we find that generic pointers may have more than one possible types. Then if you try to resolve the generic pointer, you basically face an ambiguous pointer. So we must handle pointer uncertainty effectively. Otherwise, we face the false positives and the false negatives we observed in COP. Then, based on our observations, we develop a new tool called MAS. It's a practical memory analysis system. So to be practical, when we design MAS, we want to reach three goals. We want it to be accurate, so we can find all rootkit footprints. We also want it to be robust, means we can handle real-world snapshots without any problem. And we want it to be fast, so that we can perform the analysis within minutes. I will show you in this talk, the paper gives you more details, but in this talk, I will focus on explain how MAS handle pointer uncertainties. So in MAS, we basically follow four basic rules when we deal with a pointer uncertainty. First, we want to identify data objects without following any pointer, so we avoid pointers. We try to identify data objects as much as possible. So this not only helps us in terms of locate some data object correctly, this data object will also be useful for us to correct identify invalid pointers. Second, we ignore pointers with ambiguous types. And for invalid pointers, we basically check all available constraints before we follow a pointer, identify a data object to make sure it's valid. Last, it's still possible to make errors. And when we recognize there's a mistake, we correct errors in the memory traversal. So before I explain all these four techniques, I want to point out that under these techniques, we rely on a foundation, is that we developed a fast and precise pointer analysis. Our pointer analysis can handle large-scale codes by being demand-driven. That means we only analyze a part of the program that's relevant to a pointer we try to understand. And we achieve partially flow sensitive by convert the program to a static single form. We also design the pointer analysis to be context sensitive and field sensitive. This allows us to derive the correct candidate types for generic pointers. So first, we try to find the data objects without follow pointers. Obviously, we first identify all the global variables. In addition to that, we leverage a feature in Windows called the PuTa. Basically, in Windows kernel heap allocation, we call pu, you provide a tag associated with a block you get. There's a similar feature in Linux called a slab allocator. In PuTags, many PuTags are actually associated with a unique data type. For instance, ERP PuTag is used for ERP data structure. So here we used our static analysis automatically to infer the relationships between PuTags and the data types. Given this sample program, this of course is a very simple case. Our static analysis can recognize that the tag of food is used for the food data structure. Second thing we did is that we ignore ambiguous pointers. From our experience in running COP, we found that resolving type ambiguities with heuristics is bound to have errors. And we will see a lot of errors, particularly we see more errors in real-world crash dumps. So in MAS, we only follow pointers with unique types. So before we follow in a pointer to identify data object, we will check all the available constraints. For instance, the size constraint means that the object must fall into the heap block, correct the heap block. Pointer constraint requires the data object, all pointers are pointing to the correct address range, such as null value or the kernel address range. Enum constraint checks a enum field must have a correct enum value. And the pool tag constraint verifies the data structure type and the pool tag connection. More importantly, we leverage the already identified data object to check a type constraint. So here, we require the type layout of two overlapped data objects must match. In this case, we have a pointer type P that points to this data object type P. Then we have a pointer type Q point to the middle of the type P. As you know, that we have a nested data structure in C and C++. So Q may be or may not be a nested data structure within P. So when we apply this type constraint, we require Q to be a corrected nested data structure within P. Then the question is, what if they don't match? So if they don't match, if two overlapped data structures do not match, we will check if one of the objects was identified without following the pointer. In that case, we'll keep that object and reject another one. Otherwise, we choose the larger object since the larger object usually means they meet more constraints. When we're removing an existing object, we will also remove all the previously identified objects that's only reachable from this removed object. This allows us to correct a previously made mistake. So the last step before we identify rootkit footprints is we perform integrity checking based on the all the identified data. We basically do three kinds of integrity checking. Code integrity allows us to identify the direct code modifications. Function pointer integrity requires every function pointer point to the code we trust. And the visibility integrity requires that a identified data object must also be visible for a system tool. For instance, a process object must be visible to a task list, enumerate all the processes. So the design seems pretty simple, but actually to make the system work, to make the system really work with the real world dumps, we have spent a lot of time. So for the static analysis, we wrote about 12,000 lines of C++ code. We had a prefast plugin that helped us extract the source code information. Then for the memory traversal and integrity checking, we wrote about 24,000 lines of C or C++ code. It worked as a debug extension for Windows debug. We applied a mouse to three real-world data sets. First is 11 Windows Vista SP1 crash dumps. We picked Windows Vista SP1 because Cobb works on Windows Vista SP1. And then we got 837 Windows 7 crash dumps. All these dumps Microsoft collected from the Windows error reporting. The third data set is basically 150,000 malware samples reported to Microsoft. So we test them also with Moz. So first, is Moz accurate? For the 10 Windows Vista SP1 crash dumps, here's 10, not 11, because Cobb failed to yield any result for the 11th one. So for 10 of the Windows Vista crash dumps, Moz found all the suspicious function pointers reported by Moz are true function pointers. That means we didn't have false positives. Then for all the true suspicious function pointers reported by Cobb are also found by Moz. In the second data set, when we apply Moz to the 837 Windows 7 crash dumps, we verify all but the 27 function pointers are true function pointers. This means that Moz is pretty accurate. for performance. This is a runtime distribution over the Windows 7 crash dumps when we're running MOS. You can see that the average analysis time is about 2 minutes. And the maximum is about 5 minutes. So we have this Windows 7 and Vista dumps. We try to apply MOS to detect real-world rootkits. The problem we face is that we cannot fully automate it because of third-party drivers. When we have a third-party driver, when we have a suspicious function pointer that points to an unknown module, we cannot verify, or it takes a lot of effort to verify if this unknown module is a benign third-party driver or it's a kernel rootkit. So in our analysis, we perform the analysis semi-automatically. So first, we filter out if a crash dump only have a suspicious function pointer that point to an unknown module, we ignore it. This kind of crash dump, we have 664 crash dumps. After that, we found that 84 of the crash dumps that have suspicious behavior, such as modified code or have a function pointer point to the pool region, not a module, the 84 of them are antivirus software. So here I have some story to share with you. You probably wouldn't believe it if you were not the author of those antivirus software. So one of the antivirus software hooked the KI fast entry. It's basically the first instruction executed in a kernel mode when you switch from user mode to kernel mode. And the second case, the antivirus software hooked the contact switch. So basically, the first instruction executed when there is a contact switch, it is that antivirus software. So pretty amazing. And we identified 95 rootkits. We verified them manually. These rootkits, basically, they either hide a kernel module, or they put the code in the pool region, and they have we identified the function pointer to those kernel pool regions. At the end, we have 5 crash dumps. We found a suspicious function pointer because the global data was corrupted. So at the last, we applied the MOS to 150,000 malwares. We want to understand what does the real-world malware do, right? So we found that they do hook many function pointers. In our malware study, we found that malware hooked 191 unique function pointers that belong to 31 different data structures in both the NTOS kernel and 5 different kernel modules. This basically shows that if we develop a solution to detect or analyze a kernel rootkit, we need to look at the memory everywhere, check every function pointer. We also apply MOS to see if MOS reported the kernel malware behavior, can we use that to identify new malware automatically? So we did a clustering. We look at the reported result, then we basically put all the malware with the same result together in a cluster. As you can see from this graph, we identify a lot of malware samples. They have different binary, they have different SHA-1s, but they had the same behavior to the memory, to the kernel memory. So we call them, they have the same memory footprints. So let me summarize my talk. In this talk, I presented a MOS. It's a practical memory analysis system for detecting and analyzing kernel rootkits. MOS handles pointer uncertainty effectively. And we applied the MOS to 848 real-world crash dumps. We found 94 of them have rootkits. We also applied the MOS to a large-scale study of 150,000 malware samples. We found that real-world kernel malware hooked 191 unique function pointers in 31 data structures that belong to 6 different modules, including the NTOS kernel. Right, that's the end of my talk.
We have time for some questions. Hi, I'm Kangukji from Columbia University. Thanks a lot for a great talk. It was really interesting and amazing. So I have a question about the number of the Lukis you found out of the total 848 in a CREST sample. So that means it sounds like to me that you have more than 10% of crashes because of the rookies. So is it the fact, or I want to know about the, you know, samples. So how did you pick the all those 800 samples? So you specifically focused to, you know, more suspicious crash sumps that have more, you know, feasibility to have the those rookies, or it is the general fact that we should accept that more than 10% of crash sumps are because of the rookies. So this is my question.
Cool. So, I guess the mic is pretty good, so I don't need to repeat the questions. And basically, the 848 crash dumps are when we running the experiments, we collect all the full kernel dumps available to us. And because Microsoft do not always collect the full kernel dumps because it's too big, and also we only have a 3 months retention policy, so we delete all the dumps we collected before. So at that time, it's only 800 dumps available to us. So this analysis is about all the dumps.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions? Okay, let's thank Weidong again.